Okay, welcome everybody. It's just nice to see everybody. Part two of, I think, 15, 16 Shiurim we'll be having, Please God Over Pesach. The series is sponsored by Jeff Weiss in observance of Yahrzeit Zeit for his father, Binyamin Ben Chaim, and the Shama Shalom Aliyah is sponsoring the whole series. We wanted to thank him. This evening, just while we're here, Dr. Rivka Press Schwartz will be giving the Shiur on Parshat HaShavua. That's at 8:30 tonight. It will be the Pesach login as we have now, not the regular Parsha login. No. Okay, but it's a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Aaron Adler, who's no stranger to Torah Motion, both in person and on Zoom. He's taken a number of classes on the Rav. Of course, a very a dear student of the Rav, a shamus of the Rav. He wrote a book recently, 70 Bases, I think it's called.
Conversations.
Like 7 Conversations with the Rav. We're going to get you one time to give that talk on Zoom that he gave on Shabbos in Toronto a few years ago about his personal connection to Rav Soloveitchik. Really a very fascinating talk. He made Aliyah over 40 years ago, I believe, right? 43 years or so?
79.
Okay, 1979. Baruch Hashem, be living in Israel, served as a rav in many communities, in Ramot for many years, and now he serves as the rav, I think, the Ohel on the Chama Synagogue in the heart of Yerushalayim, and it's a pleasure to welcome him back to Torah Motion to give a talk. Today is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. He gave me a few steps, so I figured, good, let's talk on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the difference Nisan, the uniqueness, where our redemption started, HaKodesh HaZelechem, Rosh Chodeshim. Rabbi Adler, Rabbi Dr. Adler, Bakasha, it's all yours.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Kelman. Erev Tov and Sahayim Tovim to everybody on the East Coast, and Erev Tov to everybody here in Israel, and Chodesh Tov to all of us. Indeed, the past Shabbat we read HaChodesh Elachem Rosh Chodeshim, Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshei Hashana. In Parshat HaChodesh, we made mention of the mitzvah of sanctifying the moon and kicking off the lunar calendar for purposes of our schedule of Chagim, of Yomim Tovim. As well as in the parasha itself, in Parshat Pekudei, we also had a mentioning of Rosh Chodesh Nisan with regard to the construction of the Mishkan. The Mishkan goes up on Chodesh HaRishon Be'echad LaChodesh, Hukam HaMishkan. So it was very interesting that in two Sifrei Torah, with two independent readings, both day, the target date, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, makes a very, very strong presence. There is something unique about Rosh Chodesh Nisan immediately in the Mishnah that talks about four Rosh Hashanah in the beginning of Masechet Rosh Hashanah, where Rosh Chodesh Nisan is one of them, and then there's Elul and Tishrei and Shvat that divides between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel with regard to Rosh Hashanah Le'ilan, but that's not our concern. But you do can see that Rosh Chodesh Nisan is special, and it's named as one of the four Rosh Hashanah for specific items, and one being the calendar and the schedule of the Chagim. But for many shulgoers, the month of Nisan carries with it a special attention, because for an entire month we're not saying Tachnun. And even though Tachnun in a weekday, if it's just a Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Friday, we're talking about a grand total of a minute's savings, depending on the speed of how long you say Tachnun. If it's Monday, Thursday, so you can add on another 2 or 3 minutes to it. People feel overwhelmed with joy that they're going to get out of shul a minute or two earlier because there's no Tachnun. And many people are not aware as to the original reason why the month of Nisan became part and parcel of some type of mini festival that already ordained or dictated that we would drop the saying of Tachnun. There is the reason that we all grew up on, and from first grade until today, and then there's what's called the original reason. And the original reason I first began to appreciate in the Rav Shir on Masechet Ta'anit, Daf Yud Zayin Omid Bet, which was astounding. And I'll just mention in the outset that there are many, many customs that we do that there are reasons, rationale that we understand why there's a minhag, why there's a custom, except that what we know might be already a secondary reason that eclipsed the primary reason. Somehow, historically, the minhagim, the customs, have its own dynamics, and they take off in a different direction, and all we remember now is the secondary reason, and completely forget the original reason. I'm just going to give you one example without getting bogged down, but we should understand the concept. We know that women, when they light candles Friday night, there's a custom that they cover their eyes, and that's something that's pretty widespread. If you ask anybody who knows anything about halakha and minhag, they're going to tell you this is because of a complication in the process of lighting Friday night candles, where there was a suggestion or a fear that a woman might accept upon herself Shabbat when she already said the bracha, v'tzivanu ladik ner shel Shabbat, and if she accepts Shabbat, she can't light the candles anymore. So what we do is a little bit of a gimmick. We have the woman light the candles and then cover her eyes and make the bracha, and then after making the bracha, she's supposed to light the candles, but whoop, the candles are lit. And every single Friday night, the same gimmick is used. The candles are lit, so it's done already, and we don't have to light it. If you ask your Sephardi brethren, Rav Avad Yosef decided that this is not the way to go, and Sephardi women actually do make the bracha first, and then they light the candles. But the Ashkenazi women do not do this. And this is the general understanding of why the women cover their eyes. However, there are people who have studied intensely the evolvement of minhagim, where they came from, how they developed, what the original reasons were. People of the likes of Professor Toshma, some people know the name, Professor Zimmer, some people know the name, Professor Sperva, some people know the name. And these are great people who've investigated minhagim. And what it turns out is that there was an old minhag that when the woman lit candles Friday night, she said a tefillah. She offered a prayer for the benefit of her family. Today, you get this in bookstores printed out, and some women actually read the text. But that was never the case. They said a private, intimate tefillah that God should take care of her husband and family and so on. And whenever there was tefillah, there was always tzedakah, and that's where the pushka box became associated with candle lighting, because tefillah and tzedakah go together. And tefillah is a gesture of raising one's hands. You have this already in Chumash Shmot with Moshe Rabbeinu, Ve'froset Kapai, and you also have it in Yeshayahu, Perek Aleph. We read this before Tisha B'Av for Haftarat Chazon. U'farischem kapechem, alim einai mikem. God says that if you raise your hands in prayer, I will ignore it. So raising the hands is a gesture of prayer. And what the women used to do at candle lighting, when they offered this trina, this prayer, they would gesture with the hands, with the hands raised up, as the Mishnah tells us with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu at the time of the war of Amalek. V'chiyadav shel Moshe oset milchama, it says when Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were up, then the Israelites were victorious. It meant, as the Mishnah tells us, when Am Yisrael was praying, when they were davening. This is a gesture of prayer. And hence the women would do this as a gesture of prayer. Later it took on that secondary idea, to which a secondary idea became already the idea that people know, that it was done to protect the problem of the bracha over lasiyatan. Okay, so that was just an example. But here we're going to get another example, and that is we don't see Tachnun the whole month of Nisan. Why? So I'm going to share screen a source page. Some of you may have downloaded it, but if you didn't, here it comes. With regard to the business of Tachnun, I'm scrolling down a little bit to source number 6. And source number 6, the Rambam tells us in the laws of Tefillah that Minhag Pashut B'chol Yisrael, translated properly, a widespread custom amongst all of Am Yisrael, She'ein Nefilat Apayim, there is no Tachnun saying, B'Shabbatot, on Shabbat, Moadim, on the Chagim, Pesach Shavuot Sukkot, V'lo B'Rosh Hashanah, V'lo B'Rosh Chodeshim, not on Rosh Chodesh, and not on Chanukah, not on Purim. And also not the mincha before Shabbat, on Friday afternoon we don't say tachanunim, and not the eve, the mincha before Yom Tov. And also during Aravit, Ma'ariv, every single night we do not say tachnun. And then the Rambam has an interesting idea, v'yesh yichidim shenoflim al peneihem ba'aravit. There are individuals who do say tachnun by Ma'ariv, and I can honestly tell you, I've davened Ma'ariv, thank God, for many, many years. I've never, ever seen anybody say Tachnun during Ma'ariv, ever. So I guess the Rambam was writing this for Litvaks, who had difficulty dispensing with Tachnun. Now, the truth of the matter is, the Rambam was such a Litvak, because the Rambam believed that there should be Tachnun every single tefillah, whether it is a weekday, whether it is Shabbat, whether it is Yom Tov. He believed that the Tachnun is an integral part of Shmon Esrei. It's not an addendum, it's not an appendix, but just as we stand and we have our feet together and we daven in a low voice and do bowings in its proper time, the Rambam includes the idea of Tachnun at the conclusion of Shmon Esrei. He believes it's part and parcel. He says there are 8 matters that we should be careful about in Shmon Esrei. If you're not careful about it, it does not require repetition of the Shmon Esrei. But at least we should be careful about it. So if a person lies down flat on his back and the person is not ill, but just out of laziness and davens of Shmoneh Esrei, it was not a good thing, but the person does not have to repeat the Shmoneh Esrei. But nevertheless, we know that we stand. We even call it the Amidah, the tefillah of standing up. The idea of Tachnun, according to the Rambam, was in that category. And hence, the Rambam felt every single tefillah should carry with the Tachnun. However, the Rambam was not going to go against a widespread custom that was accepted amongst Am Yisrael to delete Tachnun on the following days. And it's a very short list, by the way, of Shabbat and Yom Tov and Rosh Chodesh and Chanukah and Purim and a few Mincha of Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov. Very, very short list. The Rambam even tells us that on Yom Kippur there should be Tachnun. Why not? It's a day of Trina and Tfilah and Bakasha and Ta'anit. But that's not our custom. Ashkenazim do not have Tachnun even on Yom Kippur. And that's a shir in itself because there's an aspect of Simchat Yom Tov on Yom Kippur. When this comes already to Shulchan Aruch, it expands out to many, many more days. I'm looking at source number 7 on the source page here, where the Shulchan Aruch already says, Nagu shelo lipol apneihem on Tu Be'av and Tu B'Shvat, and he gets into Rosh Chodesh as well. And then he says, and also, not on Lag Ba'omer, the Ramo says, not on Lag Ba'omer. So there are all kinds of days that have been added on. And the Ramo continues, Minak Pashut shelo lipol apneihem kol Chodesh Nisan. The custom is not to have Tachnun the entire month of Nisan. And also not on Tisha B'Av and so on, not the days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Besada, so what is this all about? Lo lipol apneihem b'chol chodesh Nisan, not to have Tachnun on the entire month of Nisan. In the Rav's great hesped for his uncle, the Rav's uncle was Rav Yitzchak Zev, known as Rav Velvela. Zev is wolf, wolf is wolf, and wolf is Velvela. Rav Velvela Soloveitchik, who is known as the Brisker Rav, who went through the Shoah, unfortunately, and suffered greatly, but he does survive, and he makes it to Yerushalayim, lives 22 years in Yerushalayim. He passes away on Erev Yom Kippur of Tavshin Chaf. It was 1959. The Rav said a hesped for his uncle in New York, and that's printed in the hesped called Madodecha Midod. It's a takeoff on a phrase in Shir HaShirim, and there the word Dod doesn't mean uncle, but here he's talking about, look at my uncle. Everybody has an uncle, but Mado Decha Midod, let me tell you about my uncle. And it's a play on the words, Mado Decha Midod. And here he says, he goes into the Rav's grandfather, who is Rav Velvela's father, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik from Brisk, also the Brisker Rav, as we know. And among other things, the Rav then talks about what were the laws of Tefillah and Birkat HaMazon and other brachot before my grandfather, Rav Chaim. Now, before I give the answer that's in the hesped, I heard in the shir, the Rav quipped more than once, what was Yoredeya before my grandfather, Rav Chaim? It was pots and pans, which means, and of course, Rav Chaim came along to conceptualize everything. And what was Aruch Chaim? What was Dinei Tefillah, Dinei Brachot? Before my grandfather, Rav Chaim, it was shul calendars. Shul calendars, or Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, he said. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, or relegated to shul calendars. So a shul calendar would say, if you do say Tachnun or don't say Tachnun, if you do say Lam Natzeach, but you don't say Lam Natzeach, if you do say Avarachmim on Shabbat, you don't say Avarachmim Shabbat, I have coined a name of a disease called Avarachmim syndrome. And that is when a person has two calendars in his talus bag on Shabbat, and one of them says that on a particular Shabbat you don't say Avarachmim, and the other one says you do. No matter what the shul does, he whips out the other calendar just to make an excitement, a rash in the shul. And I had somebody like that once in Ramot, and very quietly and on the side, I asked him if he can tell me who authored the Avarachmim, knowing that he would never have a clue when it entered into the Siddur and so on. I said, until you get that information, you have no right to say if you say or not say. And the Rav said, this was the problem with Balabatim, who simply just go by the luach. It says you do say Tachnun, you don't say Tachnun, without giving a moment's thought, why the deletion of Tachnun? And you can see that the Rambam was very, very careful only to have a particular list of days that are absolutely Yemei Simcha on some level, and not just because of some good old reason, you know, of some Rebbe's Yahrzeit. But nevertheless, we have to understand, if already in Shulchan Aruch it says the entire month of Nisan we delete Tachnun, what's this all about? So we have some sources that do address this question. Masechet Sofrim, source number 8. Masechet Sofrim is not part of the official Shas. It's part of the period of the Geonim, 7th century, addendum to the Shas. And there, in the 21st chapter, it reads, V'lama ein mit'anim be'chodesh Nisan. Why are there no fast days the entire month of Nisan? It says, "Mipnei she'be'echad v'nisan hukam ha'mishkan." On the first of Nisan, the Mishkan was erected. U'shnei masar nisiim, and each one of the tribe leaders offered a special korban. That's the tail half, the second half of Parshat Naso. I call it a Balkaira's dream, because he doesn't have to really prepare it. It's the same trop, and if you get it wrong by the third day, you'll get it right by the fourth and fifth and sixth. And it just the name changes, the date changes, and that's it. But otherwise, it's Korbanot Karat Kesev Achat Shloshim Meyah, and so on. And because each day Hikrivu Korbanam L'Shnei Masar Yom, 12 days from the first to the 12th, L'Yom L'Chol Shevet V'Shevet, every day another tribe was represented, v'chol echad haya oseh b'yomo yom tov, and every day that a nasi, a president or chairman of the tribe, of the shevet, offered this korban, it was a yom tov for that shevet. So it turns out that there were 12 consecutive chagim, or yomim tovim, of all these shvatim. And therefore, b'chein le'atid lavo, God willing, the Beit HaMikdash, to some tradition, will be rebuilt in the month of Nisan, and b'sada. And therefore, we want to reenact the first 2 weeks of Nisan. Okay, first 2 weeks of Nisan. It's not exactly the first 2 weeks, it's 12 days. But you know, the 14th is Erev Yom Tov anyway. The 13th, we call it Yom Gesher. It's the bridge between the 12th and the 14th. Then from the 15th to the 21st and 22nd, in Chutz Laaretz, it's already Yom Tov. The day after is already Yisro Chag. And we're up to the 23rd of Nisan. And then we employ what we call Imkvar Nukvar. If we're ready at the day that 23 days we're not saying Tachnun, what are you going to say Tachnun for the next 4 days, 5 days, till the Rosh Chodesh Iyar? So we just let the whole month roll without saying Tachnun. So the completion of the month of Nisan without saying Tachnun has absolutely no relevance whatsoever, except for Imkvar Nukvar. If we're ready, we have over 3 weeks of no Tachnun saying, might as well, the month goes through with the majority of days without Tachnun, let's go through it with till the very, very end. So that's one version. And then it says in the continuation of this source in Masechet Sofrim, Lefikach ein omrim tachnunim ko yemei Nisan. So not only is the month of Nisan off limits for fasting, and ultimately it becomes also for eulogies, for hespedim, but we also don't say tachnun in these days. In the Siddur of Rashi, Rashi had Talmidim, and they put together a Siddur, and they quote the Masechet Sofrim, and they quote this as well, Lefikach ein omrim tachnunim ko yemei Nisan. Fine, so this is now becoming very much part of the halakha, and in Shulchan Aruch it says clearly that we read it before in source number 7, Shalo lipol al penehem b'chol chodesh nisan. And that's the beginning of the story, seems to be the end of the story, and we're all happy, there's no tachnun. But the Rav in the Shiur on Masechet Ta'anit brings to our attention to the source number 1 at the beginning of the source page, and that is the Megillat Ta'anit. So let's say a word about this book. The Megillat Ta'anit is a scroll that was written 5 years before the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. If we date it, 65 of the Common Era. And it was actually a calendar. It basically it gave us the various dates of the second Beit HaMikdash era that all kinds of Yamim Tovim were observed for a variety of political / military reasons. Things happen, and the Chachamim ordained that on this day or on that day, we should not have fasting on that day, we should not have hespedim or eulogies on that day. Those basically were the two biggies, no fasting and no eulogies on particular days. Now, this was a source that is a Eretz Yisrael source, and even though it's Aramaic, so Aramaic comes in different flavors. Just as today, if I listen to three Jews from three different regions of Europe speak Yiddish, I can identify immediately, this fellow is a Yekesha Yiddish coming from German background, this one is a Polish Yiddish coming from Poland or Galicia, and this one is a Litvisha coming from Lithuania. You can hear it in the intonation, you can hear it in the vocabulary, you can hear it in particular words. This is known, and no different than the United States, which, pardon my Canadians, the United States have from coast to coast different articulations and of English, of American English, and you can spot a Texan immediately, and you can spot somebody from Chicago and somebody from Brooklyn, and everybody has their their way and mode of speaking English, so too with Aramaic. There was the Aramaic of the Babylonian Talmud that those who study Gemara regularly are keenly familiar with. I call it, this is the Aramaic of Yikum Purkan Min Shemaya in before Musaf on Shabbat. That's clearly Aramaic from Babel. But there's also Aramaic from Eretz Yisrael, which is slightly different dialect. And the Brich Shemay that we have in the Siddur, which comes from the Zohar, that's Eretz Yisrael Aramaic. So it's somewhat different than the Aramaic that you have in the Talmud Bavli. The Megillat Ta'anit was written in this Eretz Yisrael dialect of Aramaic. So let me just read just a few lines from source number one. Alin Yomaya de'la lit'ana behon u'miktzadhon de'la limispad behon. So you hear already it sounds a little different. These are the days that we do not fast, and many of them, or some of them, we do not do eulogies as well. And the first example is min resh yarcha de Nisan, from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, at Tamnaya be, until the 8th of Nisan. So the word Tamnaya in Aramaic is shmone. The taf and the shin are interchangeable. In modern Hebrew, when you talk about an octagon, a mituman, it comes from the word Tamnaya. So Tamnaya be, the 1st to the 8th, an 8-day Yom Tov. What happened from the 1st of Nisan until the 8th? The Chachamim wrote in this book that we should not fast and we should not say eulogies. Well, before we get to the answer, let me just say, what happened to this calendar of beautiful events? The answer is, the Gemara says in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, these Chagim lost their relevance, and hence, Botla Megillat Ta'anit, the halachic effect of the Megillat Ta'anit has totally depreciated, and hence we don't observe them at all. Except for two Chagim that survived the Churban, and they are none other than Hanukkah and Purim. So Hanukkah and Purim are also mentioned in the Megillat Ta'anit, and for a variety of reasons, they survived the Churban. But all the others do not. Now what happened here? Itokam Tmida, Delo Lemispad. We do not have eulogies or fasting from the 1st of Nisan until the 8th, because something was established about the Korban Tamid. So we don't know what this means yet. This is still a little bit Chinese. And then it says, Min Tamnaya Be Vatsof Moada, from the 8th of Nisan until the end of the Chag. And here it just says Moada, but I'm just going to jump down to its parallel in source number 4 of Masechet Ta'anit Yudzayin Amud Bet. There it says, Chaga Dishvuaya. Something about Chaga Shavuot. There's something about Chaga Shavuot that took place from the 8th of Nisan until the end of the Chag. The Gemara actually tells us, well, until the end of Pesach, we're not fasting and having eulogies anyway. So it means until Yom Tov. It means from the 8th of Nisan until the onset of Pesach, there was another Yom Tov established. Something about Chag HaShavuot. Lo lemispad v'lo litanot. There's no eulogies and there are no fasting these days. Okay, so the Megillat Ta'anit doesn't really tell us what happened in these days. It just provides the date and tells us that it's forbidden to fast and to say eulogies. But to the Megillat Ta'anit was added on a skolian. That's an English word. Here it's in Hebrew, but skolian means an addendum. And the addendum now is written in the Hebrew of the Mishnah, which means Tanaim wrote the addendum, and what they did was they filled in the blanks. So just to get a little bit of a flavoring of what this skolian is, and you know that when people speak in a particular language in a formal basis, I don't mean chit-chat at the market, I don't mean just a little around-the-table talk, where sometimes people who are multilingual can just gloss into different languages. I'll say parenthetically, I once spent a Shabbat in Antwerp, Belgium, and the Gabbai made announcements after davening. He started in one language and he ended the announcements 5 languages later because he was speaking in Flemish, and he was speaking in French, he was speaking in Yiddish, he was speaking in Ifrit, he was speaking in English and German. Yeah, 5-6 languages, the set of announcements. It was incredible. But normally when people speak formally, they speak one language unless they're quoting something. Here in Israel, where we have kids growing up in multilingual environments, where perhaps in school they're speaking Hebrew and at home speaking English, so you can hear the new language called Hiblish, where kids will mix up the languages as they speak. But that's a phenomenon of Olim Chadashim. But here, in a formal sense, you would not expect that. So I'm jumping down to source number 5. In the Masechet Shabbat, Kafalef Mabet, the Gemara asked the question, Mai Hanukkah? What happened on Hanukkah? And why is that question relevant? Because it's not in Tanakh. You don't ask the question, what's a Purim about? Because the Megillah is part of Tanakh. But Hanukkah is not in Tanakh, so it's a legitimate question. And the Gemara says, the Tanu Rabbanan, and here's the quote from the Megillah Ta'anit. Kafhei b'Kislev, on the 25th of Kislev, Yomei de Hanukkah, the days of Hanukkah, Tabnaya Inon. There are 8 days of Hanukkah. The lo lemispat behon, the lo letanot behon. No eulogies, no fasting. Now listen to the continuation. Kishenichnesu Yevanim leheichal timu kol hashmanim shebeheichal ukishegavra machut bet hashmonai v'nitzchum batkum v'lo matzu elefach echad shel shemen shaya munach bechotamo shel kohen gadol v'lo yabo eladik yom echad nase bones v'diko meru shmona yamim l'shana acheret kavum v'asunum yamim tovim v'halel v'odaya. Hebrew! This is the Hebrew of the Mishnah. This is not part of the original Megillat Ta'anit, but this was the add-on to explain what exactly happened on the 25th of Kislev, and this is the famous miracle of the jug of oil that was found, and it was lit for 1 day's worth of oil, and lit for 8 days, and this is the source right here. But it's not in Megillat Ta'anit, it's not a Bayit Sheni source, it's post-Bayit Sheni source, it's already the Tanaim adding this on. So this is called the Skolyan, and I just bring it because it's famous and it illustrates properly the difference between the text of the Megillat Ta'anit and the Skolyan, which is the edition. So here we have the text, and in source number 3, we already have the addition, the add-on. And it quotes, Min Tamnaya Bei Batsof Moada Itotir, what exactly happened on Rosh Chodesh, I'm just scrolling up, here it is, Min Rosh Chodesh Ve'ad Nisan Tanaya Itokem Temida. So what exactly happened Itokem Temida? So the Skolyan tells us, Shehayu Baitusim. Who are the Baitusim? So we know that in the second Beit HaMikdash era, we already had an issue with sectarian groups. Illustrative purposes, Judaism today has different denominations of Orthodox, Reform, Conservative, and they have Reconstructionists, and within Orthodox you have all different branches, and so on. So it's not new. It's not a new phenomenon of having sectarian breakups within Am Yisrael. In the Middle Ages, we had to deal with the Karaites, and in the days of Chazal, we had to deal with the Tzedokim, the Sadducean and Baitusian sect. And they basically disagreed completely with the authority of the oral law, and they felt that Torah should be allowed, there should be an allowance for everybody to study the Chumash and to practice the Judaism as he or she sees it from the Chumash itself. And one of the mitzvot that is relevant to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and that is that the mitzvah of collecting the half shekel a month before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and that was the Parshat Shkalim. And the Mishnah says, Bechad Adar Mashmi'in al Shkalim. An announcement was made on Rosh Chodesh Adar. The season of the first United Jewish Appeal has arrived. Everyone is to donate equal amount, half shekel, and everybody has to donate it. And the purpose of this collection was that it should fill up the coffers so that on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there were monies to finance and purchase the corporate national sacrifices would come from the new monies. The Korban Tamid of the morning, Korban Tamid of the afternoon, and this was like the most popular. Of course, then there was the Korban Musaf on Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh and the Chagim, and anything else that had to do with the Ketoret and anything had to do with the Yom Kippur. All this came from the monies that were collected in the month between Rosh Chodesh Adar and Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The Mishnah says that on Rosh Chodesh Adar, they made the announcement. So, of course, you know, the diligent ones lined up and they donated it right at the beginning of the month. And then by the middle of the month, they set up booths, tables that were spread out conveniently throughout the country to allow people to donate their machzit shekel. And by the 23rd of the month, they went around with lists knocking on the doors, and a person said, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't give, here's the machzit shekel. And the next neighbor said, this year I'm not giving because last year Mr. Cohn slighted me at the Beit HaMikdash, and I'm not giving a half a shekel. So they said, fine, and they crashed through your doors, and they took your microwave, and they took your furniture, and they took it as a pawn until you gave up the machzit shekel, which meant this was coerced. A complete act of coercion, and the reason for the coercion is that if one Jew would not have given the machzit shekel, then the concept of the totality of Am Yisrael would be destroyed. And hence, every single Jew had to necessarily be an active part of this. And this is the pasuk that the mitzvah of the machzit shekel for the purchases specifically of the korban tamid and of the morning korban tamid of the afternoon, that was the major purpose. Yet, the Tzedokim felt, this is not right. And they were sounding very popular and very liberal. I mean, this is something that goes against our liberalism, coercion, religious coercion. This is not for us. And they said, it says in the Pasuk, et hakevesh echad ta'aseh, in the singular, le'yachid mashma, you want to donate, we'll stand up and applaud, kol hakavod, donate. You know, it's a wonderful thing to donate, but to force people to do it, that we're against. And our Chachamim said, in the same chapter, it says, tishmeru, in the plural. And the plural means kol Yisrael. All of Am Yisrael necessarily had to bring from the, had to donate the machzit shekel, sheyu kulam ba'im mitrumat halishka, that all these daily sacrifices, morning and afternoon, would come from the coffers, from the pot of collected half-shekel pieces from all of Klal Yisrael. And the idea that no one gave more and no one gave less, ashir lo yabe, badal lo yamit, mimachzit ha-shekel, that when it came to the daily sacrifice representing all of Klal Yisrael, every single Jew was equal before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The fact that somebody was very wealthy and somebody was dire poor made absolutely no difference. Every single Jew had an equal standing in and share in the Korban Tamid and all of the national and public sacrifices, Korbanot Tzibur. And this is what was argued. There was a debate, and a debate actually took place between our Chachamim and the heads of the Tzedokim. And it took place between the 1st of Nisan and the 8th of Nisan, and ultimately the Tzedokim gave in. They gave in, and Chachamim said, we will make a Yom Tov celebrating the unity of Am Yisrael that the Tzedokim gave in on this one. And that's how Rosh Chodesh Nisan to the 8th of Nisan becomes a Yom Tov, that Asum Yamim Tovim, that there were no eulogies and no fasting on these days. With regard to the second week, from the 8th until Yom Tov, something else happened. Another debate with the Tzedokim, and this had to do with when does Svirat HaOmer actually begin? Because the Torah says in Parshat Emor, Vayikra Perek Kav Gimel, says, Usfartem lachem mimocharat ha-Shabbat, miyom ha-miyachem et oma ha-tnufa. Mimocharat ha-Shabbat normally means Sunday, the day after Shabbat. And that's exactly how the Tzedokim understood it. And they believe that Svirat HaOmer always begins on a Sunday. So if we say it beginning at night, we're talking about a Motzei Shabbat. And if that's the case, if Mimocharat HaShabbat always means a Sunday in close proximity to Pesach, then count 7 weeks, because when is Chag HaShavuot? Chag HaShavuot has nothing to do with the Rosh Chodesh Sivan. It's the only Yom Tov in our calendar that is not linked to the Rosh Chodesh of its month. Every other Yom Tov is anchored into the Rosh Chodesh. Without a Rosh Chodesh, you don't have the first, you don't have the 15th of Nisan. Without the first in Kislev, you don't have the 25th of Kislev for Hanukkah. So, but if you don't know when the first of Sivan is, it will not impact as to when Shavuot is. Because in theory, before there was the organized calendar, you can have one day Rosh Chodesh, you can have the 30th day or not the 30th day. In theory, Shavuot could fall out on the 5th of Sivan, the 6th of Sivan, and the 7th. In our calendar, it always falls out on the 6th, and Chutz Laaretz, the second day on the 7th. But it never comes out on the 5th. But in theory, it could be the 5th, 6th, 7th, and it's totally irrelevant because there's nothing to do with the dates, the 5th, 6th, or 7th. It has to do with 50 days after Svirat HaOmer. And the question is, when do you start counting the Omer? So according to the Tzedokim, Mimocharat HaShabbat indicated Sunday. And our Chachamim said that the word Shabbat in this context does not mean Sunday, but it means the first day of Pesach. And therefore, the day after the first day of Pesach is the 16th of Nisan, whenever it may come out. So this year, Pesach comes out on Thursday, the 15th is Thursday. So Svirat HaOmer is going to be Thursday night, which means Friday, the 16th of Nisan, which means this year Chag HaShavuot will be on a Friday, and Chutz Laaretz will be Friday and Shabbat. Well, guess what? We're also not going to do Melacha in Eretz Yisrael on the second day because it's Shabbat. That's what happened when the Rav came to Israel. He came to Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't Israel yet. It was Palestine, 1935, to contest the election for chief rabbinate of Tel Aviv. He was then affiliated more with the Agudas Yisrael. That's a speech in itself. And he actually lost the election badly to the Rav of Antwerp, Rav Amiel, from the Mizrahi. But the Rav was here after Pesach until before Rosh Hashanah. He was here in Israel for Shavuot. And that year, Yom Tov came out, Shavuot came out Friday, Shabbat, or Friday, and Shabbat was Yisro Chag. So clearly he didn't do Melacha on Yom Tov Sheni because it was Shabbat. But that's a completely different discussion. But here, according to our Chachamim, Memocharat Shabbat does not mean the day after Shabbat. It means the day after the first day of Yom Tov. And this too was debated between our Chachamim and the leaders of the Tzedokim. And it took place between the 8th of Nisan and Yom Tov. And we won that intellectual battle as well. And Chachamim ordained a Yom Tov from the 8th of Nisan until Yom Tov. No fasting and no eulogies. And what's interesting, and remember the Rav pointing this out, that the Gemara tells us at the end of this particular sugya that there was an elder Baitusi, an old Tzduki Baitusi, who said to Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is ready after the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, he lives through the Korban, Moshe Ohev Haya Ohev Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu was a lover of Am Yisrael. What did he do for us? He did a great thing. Haya Yodea Sha'atzeret, Atzeret is a nickname for Chag HaShavuot, Eina Ele Yom Echad. There's only one day Shavuot in the Torah. V'kava lehem achar Shabbat, and established it to be after Shabbat, Shiyu Nochim Shnei Yamim Zachazeh. It should be in the calendar to a long weekend. A wonderful idea. Moshe Rabbeinu instituted a long weekend. It's great. You have a great vacation. You have an extra day and so on. It's almost similar to what goes on in the United States with national holidays, that they all were moved from their target dates to Mondays so that there should be a long weekend. And that was done for purely convenience. And this old Tzduki Baitusi says that tells Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, boy, Moshe Rabbeinu is really a great guy. And he saw to it that Shavuot always comes out on a Sunday and gives us a long weekend once a year. Isn't that nice? And the Rav pointed out that this is quite interesting when you compare this story to Reform Judaism of the early 19th century. And the Rav was talking about the second half of the 20th century. So when you talk to the discussions with Reform theologians at the beginning of Reform Judaism, which was on German soil, and then it was moved, it was exported to the United States and other places, the issues were biblical criticism. They started with Tanakh, and they had questions about whether the entire Chumash was Moshe Rabbeinu, where was God in the whole situation, Moshe was the author, and there were multiple authorships, and the whole question of biblical criticism, and they came to their conclusions, as they came to their conclusions, that it was no longer obligatory to observe kashrut and this and that. Okay, besanda, this is the conclusions of how Reform Judaism developed. They have to realize Reform Judaism never came to the town of Belz, they were Hasidei Belz, and offered them Reform Judaism. It started in a place where there was lack of Jewish tradition anyway. There was already secularization on German soil. And to that gathering of Jews, Reform Judaism was able to address them, and they were able to embrace it on some level. And the ultimate historic question was, did Reform Judaism, was it the last stand before total assimilation, or was it the oil that greased the machinery to allow for assimilation? And while the jury is still out on answering that question, I think the answer is elu ve'elu, they're both correct. For some people, Reform Judaism glided them more comfortably into the world of becoming goyim, and for others, it really was the last stand before falling off the cliff of being Jewish. So it had some purpose, I'm not going to deny that. So the Rav said that early generation made their case by talking about Tanakh. Now, they may have had a corrupt or perverted view of Tanakh, but at least what they were dealing with was Tanakh. But the Rav said in the late 20th century, Reform rabbis were talking about liberalism. They're talking about all kinds of highfalutin ideas of Western culture. And they weren't even talking about a pasuk in Tanakh, whether it was biblical or not biblical. And the Rav says there was that old Tzeduki Baitusi who was telling Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Moshe Rabbeinu was a nice fellow, Oyev Yisrael, and he gave us a long weekend. That's all he knew about Shavuos being on a Sunday. Whereas the earlier generations, they were trying to base themselves on the understanding of the Pasuk in the Chumash, Mimocharat HaShabbat. This is the way we understand it. It means Sunday. But ultimately, our Chachamim won that battle as well. And you have 2 weeks now of Yom Tov. 1 week because of one victory over the issue of the coercion of donating the machzit, the half shekel. And the second week, over the issue of when Chag HaShavuot would be, and the country would not have 2 days for Chag HaShavuot. One would be the day of Mochat HaShabbat, according to the rabbis, and one would be according to the Sadducean sect. That was done away with, and there was certain unity that was created, and it was cause for celebration. And the Rav said, these are the reasons why the first 2 weeks of Yom Tov, of Nisan became Yom Tov. And even though the technical force of Megillat Ta'anit was abandoned after the Churban, there were certain things that, like a vestigial organ, remained. And indeed, it remained. And what happens when these remain, and no longer the original reason is relevant and applicable, we dress it up with a secondary reason. And the secondary reason was, take a look. In Chumash and Parshat Nassau, from Rosh Chodesh Nisan until the 12th of Nisan, they have the story of the Nesiim bringing their korbanot. And this took its own had its own dynamics and became ultimately the reason why for 2 weeks of Nisan we don't have Hespedim and we don't have fast days. But it doesn't say anywhere in the Chumash that because of those 2 weeks of the Nesiim, Am Yisrael should observe any type of celebration. The celebration had to do with the Megillat Ta'anit, these two Chagim. And once they were ready on the books and no longer relevant because of reason, Am Yisrael wanted to continue them on some level, and they were continued through the idea of the Nesi'im. So we have here a most interesting example of how this develops. And again, that's 2 weeks. Then the third week is Pesach, and the fourth week is Im Kvar Nu Kvar. If already we're 3 weeks down the road with no fasting and no eulogies and no tachnun, so we'll just finish the month and make it all the way to Rosh Chodesh Iyar before we resume saying tachnun and allowing for fast days. This is how it all develops. So you see that the month of Nisan is extremely, extremely, extremely important. And now we get to another point. The Rosh Chodesh Nisan kicks off the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. Right, the Chodesh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim Rishon Hu Lechem L'Chodshei Hashana. Okay, so today is Rosh Chodesh. So all of us in Eretz Yisrael and in Canada and the United States and throughout the world observe the day of Rosh Chodesh. Fine. By what right did we observe the day of Rosh Chodesh? What did we do? How did we know it's Rosh Chodesh? Well, you look at the calendar and you see that it's Rosh Chodesh. And if you didn't look at the calendar but you went to Shul there Shabbat, the Chazan announced it in Birkat HaChodesh. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Yiyeh B'yom Chamishi, Avaleinu Tova. Fine. How did the calendar know that it's Rosh Chodesh? Well, the printer printed it. How did the printer know? Who put the calendar together? So according to 99% of Poskim, and this is the way we all grew up on, that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, who was the editor of the Mishnah, he had a grandson by the name of Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, named after his grandfather. Rabbi Yehuda Nesia carried a similar name, and sometimes we confuse the two. And this Rabbi Yehuda Nesia is an unknown persona in the Talmud Bavli. That's why many people don't know about him. But if you study Talmud Yerushalmi, he shows up. He's there, he's in Eretz Israel. And he has a son by the name of Hillel. And that's not all surprising, because when we go back to Hillel, the famous Hillel of the Beit Shammai Beit Hillel, so Hillel, he's 100 years before the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. He has a son, Shimon. And Shimon has a son, Gamliel. And Gamliel has a son, Shimon. And Shimon has a son, Gamliel. And Gamliel has a son, Shimon. And Shimon has a son, Yehuda. And Yehuda has a son, Gamliel. And Gamliel has a son, Yehuda. And Yehuda has a son, Hillel. So I just went through quite a few generations. And if you notice, there were a few Shimon and Gamliels in the middle. So there are two personalities in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. One is the grandfather, one is the grandson, and it's very important to identify which one is which, because there's a principle in halacha, halacha ki Rab Shimon ben Gamliel, and you have to know which one it is. Was it the grandson or the grandfather? And by the way, it's the grandson who's the father of Yehuda HaNasi, and there's a special principle that we follow Rab Shimon ben Gamliel. And there are three Rabban Gamliels. One is Rabban Gamliel, one is Rabbi Gamliel, one is Rab Gamliel. So it's just amazing what happened with these names. So we're talking about Hillel Hasheni, the second Hillel. And he's a great-grandson of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And what he does was, he sees that the calendar, the Kiddush HaChodesh process can no longer go on because there is now an evaporation of the real smicha of old from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's already not going to continue. And if you don't have smicha, you cannot put together a beitin of three dayanim. And if you don't have a beitin of three dayanim, you cannot establish Kiddush HaChodesh or leap year Ibu Hashanah. So what did he do? He took out from the drawer an emergency clause in the laws of Kiddush HaChodesh and Ibur HaShana, and that is at Eile Moade Hashem Mikra'e Kodesh Asher Tikra'u Otam B'Moadam Pasuk in Vayikra Perek of Gimel. These are the days, and you have a schedule of the Chagim. You have Pesach, Sfirat HaOmer, Shavuot, Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, and Yom Kippur and Sukkot. And it ends with Vayidaber Moshe Et Moade Hashem B'nei Yisrael. Eile Moade Hashem Mikra'e Kodesh Asher Tikra'u Otam Aleph Taf Mem. It does not say Aleph Vav Taf Mem. And Chazal read this as Atem, you have authority. Atem afilu mezidim, afilu mutaim, afilu shogegim, even if you make a mistake, even if you do it deliberately, you make a mistake. You have the authority to create Rosh Chodesh. And what Chachamim understood was that they can make a Rosh Chodesh today for next month, even though nobody's going to see the moon next month. But we can figure out astronomically when the moon would have appeared had witnesses been on the scene to actually say testimony to that fact. And we can make next month Rosh Chodesh. And if you can make next month Rosh Chodesh, you can make next year's Rosh Chodesh. You can make the next decade, and the next century, and the next millennia. What Hillel II does, he puts together a calendar of 19 years. And in the 19-year cycle, there are 7 years that are leap years. So it's not 1 out of 3, it's approximately 1 out of 3, but it's 7 out of 19. And this calendar simply continues and continues and continues from his day until Yemot HaMashiach. What's going to happen Yemot HaMashiach? So we will reestablish the Smicha, and we will reestablish the Beit Din, and we'll go back to the original Kiddush HaChodesh by visual sighting of the moon, and we will not have the communications issues that the Mishnah Masechet Rosh Hashanah talks about, how to communicate the fact that there was Rosh Chodesh established in Yerushalayim. They would light bonfires, and that system got messed up, and then they sent out messengers, but they didn't reach everybody, and here Yom Tov Sheni was born, because in Chutzlaris, they never knew when Rosh Chodesh was in Yerushalayim, so they kept 2 days just in case, and so on. This is not going to be in Yemot HaMashiach, because there's going to be a live transmission at the Beit Din. CNN is going to have their cameras there, and when the Dayanim say Mekudash, and those in attendance say Mekudash, Mekudash, so the Gabbai in Toronto is going to give a clap, and he's going to say, Ya Levi Ovo, it's Rosh Chodesh today, and they're going to know that it's Rosh Chodesh, and everybody's going to know it's Rosh Chodesh throughout the world. On Mars, they'll know it's Rosh Chodesh. So that's the communication issue that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the ability to overcome because of technological advantages, and so on. The idea of Rosh Chodesh today, according to 99% of the poskim, enjoys its sanctity by virtue of the Kiddush HaChodesh that Hillel HaSheni, the second Hillel, did with a judicial act, but he kicked it into motion over a 19-year cycle until Mashiach times. So every month, when you look at the calendar, and we know that this is the day that should be Rosh Chodesh astronomically, and it was so calculated by the second Hillel, and he already sanctified it a long time ago, about 1,800 years ago. Wonderful, and we're all happy with this. Until the Rambam comes along. And the Rambam, he throws out something new, a novel idea. Rambam says that from day one, Moshe Rabbeinu gave us 2 different tracks to this mitzvah of sanctifying the moon. The first is what we commonly understand as the visual sighting of the moon through judicial action. The whole first chapter of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. Fine. Second chapter of Rosh Hashanah as well. So that's what we all know. But then Rambam says, Moshe Rabbeinu already taught us, as a halakha l'Moshe Misinai, that if for whatever reason the system fails, then we automatically go to another track. It's almost like we have at home a special bulb that will light up if the electricity blacks out. So you have a blackout, so all of a sudden you have a special emergency bulb. So according to the Rambam, there's an emergency track that goes into effect when the first track fails for whatever historic reason. And indeed, the first track failed because there's no longer the ability to put together a Beit Din because we don't have the smicha of old. And what is the second track? The second track, says the Rambam, it's the observance of Rosh Chodesh as a special day by at least a minion of Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Hope everybody's listening in Chutz La'aretz to this one. I'll repeat this. It's the observing of Rosh Chodesh as a special day. How do you observe it as a special day? Well, we have Musaf, we have a custom of saying Parshal Halel, we have Kriyat HaTorah, and we had Yalav Yavar, and some women have a custom not to do certain sewing and knitting activity on Rosh Chodesh. There are things that we do, and there's no fasting, and there's no eulogies. There are things that we do, things we don't do on Rosh Chodesh to assign special status to Rosh Chodesh. But you can do that in Los Angeles. You can do it in Tokyo. The same thing. What's so special about Eretz Yisrael? So the Rambam says, 10 Jews in Eretz Yisrael means Klal Yisrael. Means Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael, says the Rambam, and this is coming from somebody who did not count the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael as one of the 613, as one of the Taryag. Later on, the Ramban, Rabbi Moshe ben Nachman, challenges the Rambam on this and incorporates the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, living and residing in Eretz Yisrael, as one of the 613. The Rambam does not count it. Having said that, the Rambam believes that the definition of Klal Yisrael is not world Jewry, as you might have normally assumed, but it's Jewry of Eretz Yisrael, and even if it's just 10. Because 10 is not an arbitrary number, 10 is a minyan. And a minyan means a representative body of all of Klal Yisrael. Now remember, the Rav talking about this with regard to Tefillah B'Tzibur, that he said, when you go to Shul and 10 people there on a Tuesday Mincha or a Wednesday Ma'ariv, that doesn't mean there are 10 people there. That means all of Klal Yisrael, past, present, and future, are there. And the Tefillah is not just another Shmon Esrei that perhaps in the confines of your home, it's a legitimate prayer, Tefillah B'Yechidut. But when you daven with the tzibur, it now becomes upgraded to the tefillah of Klal Yisrael. And the Rav pointed out that when an 11th man shows up, so the minyan is not 10 plus one hitchhiker, but now the minyan is 11. And if there are 100 people in shul, so the minyan, the tzibur is 100. And if women come to shul, that they're part of the tzibur. And hence, when women come to shul and daven tefillah b'tzibur, they are part and parcel of tefillah b'tzibur in every single way. So this is the concept of minyan. So Rambam says, he says something daring, and we don't have it on the page. We're just going to read a particular line. He says, I'll read it from Rav Kapach, whose translation is new and it's a little bit more readable than the Ibn Tibbon translation. The Rambam says, Hinei mosif lecha bi'ur. I'm going to add something here, and I'm going to postulate. Can you imagine a scenario where there's no Jews in Eretz Israel in any historic framework after Yeshua? Rama believed that it never happened, and not only that, the Rama immediately says before you faint and double over, because, wow, Nebuch, no Jews in Eretz Israel? Chalila la'el melasot zot. God forbid, Rambam says, this will never happen. God promised he would never annihilate the people. And not having a minion of Jews in Eretz Yisrael means the extinction of Am Yisrael. This is what the Rambam is saying. Even though there might be millions of Jews abroad, if you don't have at least a minion of Jews in Eretz Yisrael, there is no Jewish nation. And Hitler has won the game. Extinction. Extinction of Am Yisrael. And the Rambam says it has been guaranteed that this will never happen. But if we can just put our emotions on the side and suggest a situation, a theoretical scenario of not a minion of Jews in Eretz Yisrael observing the day as Rosh Chodesh, then that day does not become Rosh Chodesh. The calendar remains a dry piece of paper that you throw in the trash and has no relevance whatsoever. And if it happens to be Nisan, then there's no Pesach that year either. Not biblical, not rabbinic, nothing. And if it happens to be Tishrei, there's no Rosh Hashanah, no Yom Kippur, no Sukkot. This is what the Rambam is saying, which means he's telling us an unbelievable, unbelievable idea of how Rosh Chodesh functions today. So today, Baruch Hashem, we have a little bit more than 10 Jews in Eretz Yisrael observing the day as Rosh Chodesh. So I'm not all that naive by suggesting that all 7 million Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael today, Kein Yirbu, all observed the day in Beit Knesset and went to Shul and said Halil and said Musaf and so on. I'm not that naive. But quite a few million did. And it's a tremendous, tremendous idea. Which means that if you're planning a trip to Eretz Yisrael, for those of you abroad, and you're looking at dates, consider being here for Rosh Chodesh, because at least that Rosh Chodesh, you become an active participant in the sanctity of Rosh Chodesh of that month. And to take this step a little further, The Rosh Chodesh Nisan not only kicks off the Yom Tov of Pesach 15 days later, the 15th of the month, but it's also Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshei Hashana, which means there's a difference between Rosh Chodesh Nisan and perhaps Rosh Chodesh Tevet. If for whatever reason there is no minyan of Jews in Eretz Yisrael on a particular Rosh Chodesh Tevet, so then the fast of Asarat B'Tevet wouldn't take place. Okay. And if it would be Adar, so Purim wouldn't take place. And if it would be Kislev, so Hanukkah wouldn't take place. Maybe you'd say not the end of the world. And if it would be Cheshvan, no big deal, right? Nothing happened in Cheshvan. But if it happens in Nisan, so if you don't have the first month, Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshei Hashana, kicked into halachic motion, then if you don't have the first, you don't have the seventh. Because you can't have the seventh without the first. Which means if Rosh Chodesh Nisan isn't kicked into motion, according to the Rambam's understanding, not only would there be no Pesach that year, but there'd be no Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot as well. And also Shavuot, come on. Why? Because the months are based on the seventh month. And the seventh month is the seventh from the first. And if the first never gets the first base, there is no seventh. And this is so significant about Rosh Chodesh Nisan. We just have a few minutes, and I just want to mention that this vitally important idea, or novel idea, that the Rambam says over here, he's so proud of it, but not just proud, he says it's one of the most fundamental ideas in Judaism. And what's startling is that nobody else knows this. When people talk about the calendar, they talk about what I mentioned about Hillel HaSheni, and that's it. And nobody mentions the Rambam's view. But the Rambam says, Yesh kan yisod gadol me'od miyisodot ha'emunah. I'm quoting Rabbi Kapach's translation. In the Ibn Tibbon translation, it's he says, Ubekan shorish gadol me'od mishorshei ha'emunah. So this is the difference translating the word root or yisod, fundamental. It's the same idea. And why do I bring this to your attention? So I'm doing work. I'm putting out a sefer mitzvah shem in the summer on my scholarly articles on the Rambam. We know the Rambam was in love with the number 14, and the book Mishneh Torah divides into 14 books. But that's not where it begins or ends. Every single halachic book of the Rambam and Torah book, the number 14 plays a role, and I can prove it in the book of Mitzvot, and I can prove it in Moreh Nevuchim. He divides things into 14, and I have a hunch. That the number 14 is somehow linked to a letter that the Rambam's grandson, Rabbi David ben Avraham ben HaRambam, wrote about biographical information about his grandfather, the Rambam. And the Rambam was born on none other than Erev Pesach, which is the 14th of Nisan. He has an attachment to the number 14. There's no question about it. And the question that is raised, if number 14 shows up in all of his halakhic writings, we're a little bit puzzled that there are 13 principles of belief. The Ani Ma'amin and the Siddur, which is a poetic rendition of the Rambam's 13 principles in the last chapter of his commentary to Masechet Sanhedrin, Kol Yisrael Yesh Lam Chelek L'Olam Haba, and there he spells out 13 principles of belief. Most of us know the 12th because Avram Fried and others made songs to Ani Ma'amin Be'Emunah Shleima Sheh. But we also know the 16th century Italian poem Yigdal, which is nothing but a poetic rendition of the 13 principles of the Rambam. So the great Rosh Yeshiva of Ma'ale Adumim, the late Rosh Yeshiva, and many of you in Toronto remember him fondly, Rav Nachum Rabinowitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, writes in his Perush on the Rambam and in an article that the Rambam actually had 14 principles of Judaism. For some reason, the 14th is not mentioned in that source in the end of Masechet Sanhedrin, but the 14th source, which is not mentioned, is the doctrine of free will. And in the Laws of Tshuva, the 5th chapter in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam calls Bechirah of Shit, free will, an Ikar, one of the Ikarim. So Rav Nachum Rabinowitz believed that, yes, there is a 14th, and I believe it's this idea of free will. Others have challenged this, and they said, look, the Rambam talks about, part of the 13, the idea of reward and punishment. And predicated upon reward and punishment is free will. Because if there'd be no free will, nobody would be held accountable for anything, neither for good nor for bad. So by saying a principle of reward and punishment, implicit you also have the doctrine of free will. So this has been challenged. But there's another Rav in town, Rav Uri Shirky, and he's a very, very popular French Rav, and he suggested something. I had heard it in his name, but I actually wrote him an email. He confirmed, and he said, I can use this publicly, that he believes that it's this novel idea that the Rambam is saying in the Book of Mitzvot. It's in the positive mitzvah 153, Kuf Nun Gimel, and he says, V'yesh kan yisod gadol miyisodei ha'emunah. He uses these words, yisodot, or translated by Ibn Tibon, shorashim. These are root mitzvot, basic mitzvot, and Rav Shirky believes that he has hit the 14th. In other words, both Rav Rabinowitz and Rav Shirky concur that there is a 14th. And the only question is, what, will the 14th please stand up? I always kid this by saying that when kids sometimes are honored to sing Yigdal Friday night in shul, and they get to the last line, you ever notice they sing it twice? Meitim Michael Berov Hasdo Baruch Adaya Jem Tilato Meitim Michael Berov Hasdo. They do that because the niggun doesn't fit, and they have to repeat it. That's all. But I say this is because the kids aren't even aware of it, but subliminally they're echoing the 14th line that's unwritten, and there are 14 lines to, should be 14 lines to Yigdal. So here you have this wonderful idea of the Rambam with regard to Kiddush HaChodesh and the expansion of this idea, how significant today Rosh Chodesh Nisan is and was to establish it in the calendar as Rosh Chodesh, for if this would not have taken place, there would be no Pesach, no Shavuot, no Rosh Hashanah, no Yom Kippur, and no Sukkot. So I have good news for everybody in Eretz Yisrael throughout the world. We did keep the day today as Rosh Chodesh, and Baruch Hashem, in Tavshin Pei Gimel, we will have Pesach, and we will have Shavuot, and we will have Rosh Hashanah, we will have Yom Kippur, we will have Sukkot, we will have Hanukkah, we will have Purim, and the calendar is intact, and we daven three times a day, Hashiva Shofteinu Kvarishana V'yotzenef Machila. The Rambam tells us, on the eve of Yemot HaMashiach, we will reestablish the smicha of old, and we will be able to reconstitute the Sanhedrin and put together a Batei Din of three, so that visual sightings of the moon will once again become the practice, and God willing, we'll say to this as well, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. I wish each and every one of you Chag Kasher v'Sameach. I always tell people, kosher it's going to be, no question about it. But I say with three hashgachas on the bleach for Pesach, it's going to be very kosher. But it should be Sameach. We should all enjoy, and Am Yisrael should get itself, pull itself together, and we should be met in a unified way, go into Pesach properly, as Klal Yisrael should be. Ata echad b'shimcha echad, umika amcha Yisrael, goy echad ba'aretz. Chag Sameach to each and every one of you.
Okay, thank you.
Back Hashem.
Thank you. Chodesh Tov.
Chodesh Tov. Chodesh Tov to each and every one of you. Yeah,
let me see. One second. Beautiful. Chodesh Tov.
Chodesh Tov, Arilo, to you.
Chodesh Tov. Chodesh Tov.
Shlomo.